Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials hold talks in Jordan in an alleged bid to de-escalate tensions in the occupied territories. A number of Arab parliament speakers and lawmakers visit Damascus as Arab states try to restore ties with Syria. The Russian president again hits out of the West for its weapons supply to Ukraine, saying that Moscow should take into account the nuclear capabilities of NATO. Top story this hour, Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials holding talks in Jordan in the midst of heightened tensions in the occupied territories. The talks in the Red Sea port of Aqaba also included officials from the United States and Egypt. At the end of the meeting, Israel and Palestinian Authority officials stressed the need for de-escalation. They also agreed to meet again in Egypt next month. Resistance groups, including Hamas, had already called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from that meeting. That's because they regarded it as a U.S. plot against Palestinian aspirations. Meanwhile, university students in the besieged Gaza Strip rallied against the Aqaba meeting and in support of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Israel has intensified crackdown against Palestinians recently. The violence has killed more than 60 Palestinians so far this year. Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip have denounced the meeting between senior officials from the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli regime in Jordan. U.S. and Egyptian representatives were also present at that meeting. Ashraf Shannon has a report from Gaza.
Palestinians in Gaza, including resistance factions, non-governmental organizations, academics, as well as civil society groups, held a national conference on Sunday to condemn the Aqaba summit. The meeting between Israeli and the Palestinian Authority officials was held in the Jordanian Red Sea Resort of Aqaba. It was also attended by representatives from the United States and Egypt. The spokesman for Hamas resistance movement said that the Aqaba summit aims to cover up the Israeli regime's ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people.
The Aqaba Security Summit will only harm the Palestinian cause and aims to abort the simmering uprising in the West Bank and Al-Quds. The participation of the Palestinian Authority in this summit only indicates the resumption of security cooperation with the occupying regime. We call on all countries to hold an international conference to support the rights of the Palestinian people.
The summit comes only days after Israeli regime forces killed around a dozen Palestinians and wounded some 90 others in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. In its final communique, the conference in Gaza stressed the importance of increasing all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation and protecting occupied Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque against all Israeli plots.
All forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation all over Palestine are legitimate and will continue to increase despite all conspiracies and challenges. We also warn the Israeli regime against playing with fire and violating the sanctity of Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians maintain that the Aqaba summit aims to sow seeds of division among Palestinians and to suppress resistance groups in the occupied West Bank.
The Aqaba meeting, which is going to be held today with the sponsorship of the Americans, Egypt, Jordan, and that will include Israel and the Palestinian Authority, is intended, in my opinion, to resume security coordination between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. And also, I think it's intended to crack down on Palestinian resistance.
Many Palestinians believe that the Palestinian Authority has become a haven for small Palestinian factions that have long abandoned the path of resistance against the Israeli occupation. Since the start of this year, over 60 Palestinians, including 13 children, have been killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Analysts say the Aqaba summit will only give Tel Aviv the green light to kill and maim more Palestinians. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The heads of a number of Arab parliaments have paid an official visit to the Syrian capital, and that following a devastating quake that hit the country in early February, and amid increasing steps taken by a number of Arab states toward mending relations with Syria. Mohammed Ali has more in his report.
An official delegation from the Arab Interparliamentary Union has met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said the visit shows there are Arab institutions still capable of taking action for the interest of Arab people. He also thanked those countries for their rapid response in assisting Syrians following the earthquake. The head of the union expressed solidarity with the Syrian people, underlining the importance of taking necessary action to ensure Syria's return to playing an active role in the Arab world. The delegation, which includes heads of parliaments of the UAE, Egypt, Libya, Jordan, and Palestine, then headed to the Syrian parliament, where they met with its speaker, Hamoud Sabbagh.
We represent Arab people. This is a historic visit. We wanted to convey a message of support to the brotherly Syrian people. We had a high-level meeting with President Assad, who is a highly educated person. We had a rich dialogue with him. We were glad to meet him. In brief, we came to say that the people we represent support Syria.
Members of the delegation called for the restoration of relations between Syria and the Arab world, promising to exert all efforts for that purpose. They expressed readiness to offer all the help needed to alleviate the people's suffering after the devastating earthquake that hit the country, while calling for all sanctions crippling Syria's economy to be lifted.
Going on, the death toll from a migrant shipwreck near the coast of southern Italy has risen to nearly 60. Several children also among the victims. The Coast Guard says around 80 migrants have survived the tragic incident. The vessel crashed against rocks during rough sea weather. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says that she is deeply saddened by the tragedy and called for progress and a stalled reform of EU asylum rules. Italy is one of the main landing points for migrants trying to enter Europe by sea. More than 20,000 people have reported died or gone missing in the central Mediterranean since 2014. The Russian president says that the West is an indirect accomplice to the crimes committed by Ukraine in the war with Russia. Vladimir Putin says that NATO is indirectly involved in the conflict by sending tens of billions of dollars in weapons to Ukraine. He also stressed that Moscow has no choice but to take into account the nuclear capabilities of NATO, and that's because the U.S. military alliance is trying to defeat the Russian Federation. Putin said that he had no doubt that a multipolar world would happen. He made those comments in an interview with a Russian TV channel. Thousands of Sri Lankans have streamed into the streets of the capital Colombo in protest of the government's decision to postpone local elections. Police responded with tear gas and water cannon. The protesters were trying to march on the main business district when they were dispersed by the police. Some 15 people were treated for minor injuries. The government says it cannot finance the March 9th elections because of the country's crippling economic crisis. Sri Lanka was also seen at massive rallies last July when scores of people stormed the presidential office and residence, occupying them for days. The crisis forced the then-president Gotabaya Rajapaksa to flee and resign. The turmoil was triggered by severe shortages of food, fuel, cooking gas, and medicine after Sri Lanka went bankrupt because it could not repay its foreign debt. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has unveiled a new cruise missile that's capable of hitting targets with a range of more than 1,600 kilometers. The new accomplishment adds to the already long list of precision-guided missiles and other weaponry manufactured by Iranian armed forces in the face of foreign threats.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has announced the operation of a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers. Speaking at a televised program, commander of the IRGC Aerospace Division, Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh, said the new long-range missile is codenamed Pave. The commander said this was to honor the Iranian forces martyred in the Khorasan province. The Brigadier General noted that all of Iran's missiles are now manufactured with precision-guided accuracy, adding that all American bases in the region are within the reach of the Iranian missiles. Hajizadeh said, "We are now capable of targeting American aircraft carriers at a 2,000-kilometer distance." He noted that the U.S.'s superiority has been shaking after Iran developed its new hypersonic missile, which can maneuver outside the Earth's atmosphere and defeat all anti-missile defense systems. In a stern warning also to Europe, the Iranian commander said, "Of course, we have kept a distance at 2,000 kilometers out of respect for the Europeans," adding, "We hope that Europeans would preserve their dignity." The remarks by the Iranian commander came at a time when Europe has done its share of trying to antagonize Iran by closely aligning its Tehran policies with those of the U.S. After all, the European countries, namely France, Germany, and the UK, have been maintaining a hostile posture toward Iran's defensive missile and peaceful nuclear programs. The EU has also challenged Tehran's regional influence and cooperated with Washington in its anti-Iran sanctions. Needless to say that last month, the European Parliament approved an amendment calling on the European Union and its member states to include the IRGC on their terror list. The resolution drew strong reaction from Iran. IRGC's chief commander, Major General Hossein Salami, warned that the Europeans would suffer the consequences of the move. The 27-nation bloc has also been slapping more sanctions on Iran over what it calls the country's approach toward foreign-backed riots that erupted in some Iranian cities in September.
The West Asia region has been the scene of catastrophic wars and conflict in the past 40 years, waged by the U.S. and its allies, including Israel. And this highlights the need for countries in this region to stand firm in the face of foreign threats. And one way to do that is to come up with new sophisticated military hardware, and something which is highlighted in Iran's military doctrine.
The recent IRGC announcement comes as the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has called on the country's military to increase its efforts to attract, nurture, and train capable Iranians in line with the Islamic Revolution military doctrine. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has called on the IRGC to use its full capabilities to be able to protect the revolution and to strengthen the IRGC's spiritual and military foundations. This can be clearly highlighted in General Hajizadeh's comments when he addressed the issue of Iran's growing missile power. He has enumerated features of the country's hypersonic missile that was manufactured late last year and announced a new cruise missile's inclusion in the list of IRGC's military hardware. This brings to the spotlight the military might of the Islamic Republic, which includes capabilities of Iran's army with its latest underground base for fighter jets, and more particularly the country's missile power in the face of the West's threats. That comprises threats coming from Israel, with the regime targeting several military sites in the city of Isfahan lately. While U.S.'s benefit lies in creating regional insecurity, as General Hajizadeh put it, there needs to be a military power in the region to deter such threats. Tehran believes that Washington is a root cause of almost all global conflicts, including the war in Ukraine. The Islamic Republic argues that the West Asia region sits on a security fault line, given the history of conflicts in the past four decades. Another factor that Tehran has always highlighted is the need to maintain the country's military might. It says if it fails to be strong, the enemy will bring the war inside Iran. That's why Iranian military commanders urge and advise Iranian armed forces to meet the security needs of the nation. Given all the threats posed by the U.S. and its allies, the Corps has always been aiming to render the American war machine ineffective, and thus has managed to bring all the U.S.'s regional bases within the range of its defensive firepower. They have also turned Washington bases in the region into its weak spots, with the IRGC having the ability to strike U.S. outposts whenever the need arises.
The first National Conference on Diplomacy and Transboundary Environmental Challenges has been held in Tehran, and this is one of the biggest events to be held in the country that addresses several environmental issues, including climate change and pollution. We have a report on that.
The current world is facing many environmental troubles like climate change, dust storms, and pollution. In this regard, the Center for Political and International Studies of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Iran has organized its first national conference on diplomacy and cross-border environmental challenges.
This conference would be a very good turning point for going forward to raise the, let's say, awareness, let's say, global, the national awareness on what is going on, let's say, in terms of climate change impacts, in terms of, let's say, transboundary rivers, in terms of marine pollutions and sand and dust storms. This is the main objective of this session.
The four main issues discussed in the event were diplomacy and climate change, diplomacy and solutions on how to deal with the dust phenomenon, diplomacy and sustainable management of rivers and common water resources, and diplomacy and pollution of the Caspian Sea, Persian Gulf, and Oman Sea.
This conference is considered the biggest environmental event in Iran due to the comprehensiveness of the topics discussed as well as the number of speakers and participants.
The first national conference on diplomacy and transboundary environmental challenges was held in the presence of the Iran Minister of Energy and the head of environmental organization at the Office of the Political and International Studies of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Also, several prominent speakers examined different dimensions of cross-border environmental challenges and presented their proposed solutions for the development of environmental diplomacy in the framework of separate and parallel roundtables. The head of Iran's Department of Environment hailed the efforts made to tackle the country's environmental challenges.
The general approach of the 13th government is that it sees environmental diplomacy as a precursor to political diplomacy. Fortunately, we've seen its results and achievements in the last year and a half. Considering the policies of the government that cooperation with neighboring countries is on the agenda, we saw this cooperation at a very good level, especially with the holding of the regional ministerial meeting of environmental cooperation for a better future in Tehran last year. God willing, the statute of the regional environmental fund is being discussed between the countries of the region, and based on this important achievement, the United Nations thanked Iran in its recent resolution and introduced the Islamic Republic as the host of the international conference on combating sand and dust storms in 2023.
The achievements of the First National Conference on Diplomacy and Cross-Border Environmental Challenges will be useful in the process of decision-making and adopting new policies in the country's environmental sectors. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
And with that, we come to the end of this broadcast from Tehran. Goodbye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
NATO and the European Union have given a cold reception to a Chinese peace roadmap for Ukraine. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia Today, the RT network, has covered this story and tells us more. The Western backers of Ukraine in the ongoing conflict with Russia have offered a reserved reaction to a Chinese proposal for bringing the hostilities to an end. The 12-point roadmap was published by the Chinese Foreign Ministry on Friday, 24th of February. NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg effectively brushed off the proposals, stating that Beijing lacks credibility to float such a settlement plan altogether. China doesn't have much credibility because they have not been able to condemn the invasion of Ukraine, Jens Stoltenberg told reporters while mentioning the close ties between China and Russia. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen offered a similar reaction, stating that the roadmap was, in effect, a vague set of principles rather than a concrete action for peace. She also accused China of already siding with Russia, despite Beijing maintaining a neutral position in the hostilities. You have to see them against a specific backdrop, and that is the backdrop that China has already taken sides by signing, for example, an unlimited friendship right before the invasion. So, we will look at the principles, of course, but we will look at them against the backdrop that China has already taken sides, Ursula von der Leyen said. Some individual members of the European Union have voiced their opinions on the roadmap as well. German government spokesman Wolfgang Büchner, for instance, said it included some important elements, but also lacked other positions, namely a demand for Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine. Poland, one of the top supporters of Kiev, provided a more positive reaction to the Chinese peace plan, with the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, stating it could help pave the way towards peace. We cannot ignore such a great partner and such a great power as China, President Duda said. Unlike most Western countries, China has refused to condemn Russia's military operation in Ukraine and has not imposed economic restrictions on Moscow. Top Chinese officials have repeatedly said that Beijing wants to find a peaceful solution to the hostilities in Ukraine rather than fuel them through arming Kiev. The 12-point Chinese roadmap urged each side of the conflict to stay rational and to exercise restraint, whilst calling upon the international community to encourage all efforts to end the year-long hostilities. All parties should support Russia and Ukraine in working in the same direction and resuming direct dialogue as quickly as possible, so as to gradually de-escalate the situation and ultimately reach a comprehensive ceasefire agreement, the document said. China's Xinhua news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. China has called for international efforts to create conditions for the resumption of peace talks to resolve the Ukraine crisis. China, on Friday, 24th of February, released a paper stating its position on the political settlement of the Ukraine crisis, saying dialogue and negotiations are the only viable solution to the Ukraine crisis. China's call came on the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The crisis has caused many casualties, displaced numerous people, aggravated geopolitical confrontation in Europe, intensified global energy and food shortages, and undermined regional and international security. The international community should stay committed to the right approach of promoting talks for peace, help parties to the conflict open the door to a political settlement as soon as possible, and create conditions and platforms for the resumption of negotiations. China will continue to play a constructive role in this regard, said the paper. All parties must stay rational and exercise restraint, avoid fanning the flames and aggravating tensions, and prevent the crisis from deteriorating further or even spiraling out of control. All parties to the conflict should support Russia and Ukraine in working in the same direction and resuming direct dialogue as quickly as possible to gradually de-escalate the situation and ultimately reach a comprehensive ceasefire arrangement, the paper added. 1 year into this conflict, there is still no prospect of a peaceful settlement. On the Ukraine issue, China's position boils down to supporting talks for peace. China's proposals reflect its consistent stance that it stands for peace and dialogue, said Ding Xiaoxing, director of the Institute for Eurasian Studies, China Institute of Contemporary International Relations. All measures conducive to easing the humanitarian crisis must be encouraged and supported, and parties to the conflict should avoid attacking civilians or civilian facilities, protect women, children and other victims of the conflict, and respect the basic rights of prisoners of war, the paper said. China opposes armed attacks against nuclear power plants or other peaceful nuclear facilities, said the paper, adding that the threat or use of nuclear weapons should be opposed and that nuclear proliferation must be prevented and the nuclear crisis avoided. China has offered economic solutions to the woes brought on by the Ukraine crisis, including facilitating grain exports, stopping unilateral sanctions, and keeping industrial and supply chains stable, said Li Ziguo, an expert with the China Institute of International Studies. Li Ziguo added, "The vast majority of countries hope for an early end to the crisis in Ukraine. China's proposals are in line with the general historical trend of peace and development and serve the interests of people globally, and more importantly, the interests of both Russia and Ukraine." Li Ziguo added, "Without a ceasefire, there are risks of intensified spillovers," said Li Yongquan, the head of the China Society for Russian, Eastern European and Central Asian Studies. Li Yongquan added, "Released at such a time, this paper carries heavy weight, and it's a document from a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council, namely China." Britain's The Guardian newspaper has also covered this story and tells us more. Western leaders have largely dismissed the peace plan for Ukraine laid out by the Chinese government, arguing that Beijing does not have the international credibility to act as a mediator in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. China's government called for peace talks whilst urging all parties to the conflict to avoid nuclear escalation and end attacks on civilians, in a statement which appeared to maintain Beijing's stance that the West was fueling the conflict in Ukraine, and which analysts dismissed as anodyne. The 12-point position paper on Ukraine was released on Friday morning, 24th of February, on the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The paper, for which Ukraine was not consulted, was cautiously welcomed by Kiev, but criticised by US officials and some analysts who noted the growing ties between China and Russia. On Wednesday, China's top diplomat visited Moscow and pledged a deeper partnership between Beijing and Moscow. Speaking to reporters on Friday in Tallinn, Estonia's capital, NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said China doesn't have much credibility because they have not been able to condemn the invasion of Ukraine. Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, said China had already taken sides in the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program of Your Point, and I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And we have two dear speaker guests here with me, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. Welcome. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, in this episode of today, we're going to discuss one of the most controversial issues of Islamic world about Palestinian issues. So, as you know, Palestine is one of the most valuable lands and regions in Islam thoughts and also other religions. So, in this episode, based on the leadership statements, we're going to discuss this issue.
She's standing on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents.
Since the Nakba in 1948, the Palestinians have been in a vicious cycle of exile, expulsion, relocation.
This training gives us the skills and expertise to help us pursue a successful career in the future and helps us in the day-to-day life.
The youth are the same, but the circumstances around them have changed. The harsh realities faced by the youth nowadays makes life harder for them compared to previous generations. With the current limitation, the youth have a hard time achieving their aspirations and dreams.
To a lot of Palestinians, this is more unrealistic. It's more unrealistic because 7 million Palestinians will not simply give up their human rights to return back to their land. So for them, this is the solution. And Israel has, the 6 decades we've had, Israel has tried everything except what they think is the right solution, the right for the Palestinians, which is a solution based on international law, based on recognizing basic human rights, allowing Palestinians to return to their homes. This is the solution which Israel has not tested, which the international community has not tried, even though this is a solution which is enshrined under various agreements, various human rights treaties throughout the world. So for Palestinians, this is the only way that the real solution in Palestine will come about.
First of all, let's start with the history of this land and also the importance of this issue in Islamic world. Brother Ali, let's start with you.
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. The issue of Palestine is one of the key issues and one of the most important issues in the Islam world. And as the leader himself said, that it's one of the most urgent issues in the world of Islam.
Yeah.
And for everyone, it has to be clear that why it is the first and foremost issue and one of the most important issues in the Islam world. So if we are going to dissect the issue, we need to have a look at the history of formation of this forged and fake country. We believe that there was no country under the name of Israel, and still we do not recognize such a country because it was a land that was usurped by some. So some of the European countries and some of, let's say, Western countries, let's say, have tried to appoint a piece of land in the world which is one of the most strategic centers in the world as a center for the gathering, or let's say, for settlement of the Jews. So they selected this important part of the world, which is exactly, and which was exactly inside the heart of the Islamic Ummah. You might be asking, why is this that important, and why is it one of the key issues of the Islam world? Why is it one of the basic and, let's say, principal issues of the Islamic Ummah? It has some factors that can be actually included as answers to this question.
Yeah.
First is that Palestine itself is a Muslim country, and it was usurped by another group of, let's say, people, a group of nations, let's say, and with the axis of UK. So they tried to appoint a part of the world and actually make a theory about it and to call it, let's say, the land of promised land, and make a, let's say, ideological background for this, and it's starting to transfer the Jews from different countries to this country. Second, it was one of the important Islamic centers because it was the first Qibla of the Muslims. So it is important for us because it is related to our Islamic beliefs. The Masjid al-Aqsa, which is one of the first Qibla of the Muslim, is located there. And except Masjid al-Aqsa, there are too many other masjids in this city, almost 30, 35 masjids, which were among the important masjids at that time, at the dawn of Islam. So it is, again, one of the Islamic centers that has been usurped. The third point that I can refer to is that there is a danger of improvement and progress of a fake country in the center and in the heart of the Islamic land. All of us are familiar with the Islamic territories before that issue and the kind of way that they tried to target the Ottoman Empire and how to paralyze it and the way that they paralyzed it. So that plant, let's say, seed, which was not really in the right place to be planted. So we are witnessing all of us that all the Western powers are trying to support and back this center, this fake country, with mostly ideological purposes, and secondly with a sort of, let's say, humiliating the Islamic Ummah.
Yeah.
So it is important for us to focus and to back and defend the Palestinians as Muslims. And one important point, which is, necessary to be mentioned, is that we as Muslims have duties based on Islamic teachings. In Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has put it on our shoulder that if we are hearing the voice of oppression of a Muslim, it's our duty to support him, to back him.
Yeah.
So I think this goes at the first factor that can be added to the others.
Thank you for your elaboration. So, we got to know, to hear, we understood that, this Palestinian issue is one of the most important things, and you elaborated some factors of this importance. But at the next level, if we refer to some of the leaders' statements, we got to know that it is too urgent to actually deal with and cope with this problem. I want you, Brother Muhammad, to tell me why is it a priority for us? I mean, there are other important things. There are another wars, like, I don't know, in the history of human beings, like World War II, that we had a lot of sacrifices in that war too. But why we are putting emphasis on this special issue, and we call it this something really urgent?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Referring back to the speeches of the lead of the Islamic leader Ayatollah Khamenei, he mentions a very important keyword in his statement about Palestine and Israel. He says that how Israel is a cancer, not only cancer in the Muslim world, but cancer in the entire region. If you see all the major conflicts that we're facing, to the most recent Daesh conflict that we had in Syria.
Yeah.
Even the Arab Spring, the uprising that we had recently, it was let down because of Israel itself. So, of course, considering how cancerous Israel and its political agenda is and how their ideology is based upon, it's important we combat this cancer before it spreads.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the maps of the occupied lands before the occupation and until now, you will see year by year the lands of the Palestinian, the oppressed people, the houses are being bulldozed, the lands are slowly being usurped to the point that a small percentage of that land that they originally owned is now in their own hands, and majority of the land is now being occupied by this cancer. So if we do not attempt to combat this cancer in the region, it's going to be too late in the future. And like our brother Ali mentioned, you have to see the reason why this entire country, so-called occupation, occurred. Why in the entire world they could have given, England could have given a small area of their own country. The mm-hmm. U.S. could have given their own, you know, a state for, a bigger state for Israel. They could have given, so many lands exist in the world, but they had to plant this cancer in this specific region, the heart of the Islamic world.
Yeah.
So there was a specific reason why they did so. And this progression and this, so much of petrol dollars spent in this, so much of, you know, taxes, the taxes taken from the people, from the, you know, American people and people from around the world are being spent in trying to, you know, make this occupation even vast. It gives us a red alert that yeah. it is now the time more than ever to combat this cancer and to remove it altogether at once. So this is why we call this an urgent matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, really, for your elaboration. And you mentioned this cancer and the amount of money that they are investing in this issue. So,
I want to add some other points.
I'm a lawyer.
So let me add some other points to the explanations of respected brother Muhammad about the urgency of the issue of Palestine. And mm-hmm. it is that, I mean, for every human being, there are some issues that are of high importance and urgency. For example, the issues related to eating and the issues related to breathing. I mean, this is our life. I mean, mm-hmm. we yeah. need to survive and we need to have. But there are some other issues, again, that are very urgent for us, like our security. I mean, the security of me as a person. Mm-hmm. We as the people who are living in West Asia. So we have an issue of security. In case there is no security, our life, again, would be in danger. So it is one of the foremost priorities of us. We believe that this country here has actually endangered our security. So security, like food, like any other, I mean, material that we need for our survival is important. This security actually is quite clear. If you ask any Muslim in Islam land, not only in the West Asia, it endangers the security of all of the Islamic Ummah, mm-hmm. because you are seeing the consequences of this wicked existence on the scene of the earth. All the neighboring countries are in trouble and in turmoil due mm-hmm. to the existence of this cancerous complex. So security is very important for us. That's why it's the most urgent issue of the slum world.
And even though we have instances of occupation, let's say the most recent one as being Kashmir, occupied by the Indian government, we have many other occupations like Bahrain, occupied by, you know, the regime that is not necessarily backed by the people, or the more recent the revolution of Yemen. All these were matters that were of high priority, but none of them as the priority number one, as the priority of Palestine. Why? Because all of the chaos that we see around us, it's mainly because of Israel.
And thank you for your presence here, Brother Ali and Brother Muhammad. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us in this episode. It was all the time we had for today's episode. And we're going to discuss this issue more in other episodes. So I bid you farewell, and I leave you in the warm embrace of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Father, to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the battle's fine. Tomorrow we'll be free. Palestine, tomorrow we'll be free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
All official reports and surveys show that people in Europe have started a very difficult year, and the most important reason is the energy crisis caused by the war in Ukraine, which has led to widespread economic crisis and inflation in Western countries. We have taken at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia's Sputnik news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The European Statistical Office, Eurostat, reported on Thursday, 23rd of February, core inflation in the 20-nation euro area registered a new record high of 5.3%, which is a revision of the initial reading of 5.2%. Core inflation reflects the change in the cost of goods and services except for food and energy prices. According to the Statistical Office, preliminary annual inflation estimates stood at 8.5%, while in 2022, the European bloc recorded an annual inflation rate of 5.1%. Eurostat, the European Statistical Office, added, "The highest annual rates were recorded in Hungary with 26.2%, Latvia with 21.4%, and the Czech Republic with 19.1%. While suggesting that the price growth surge registered last year might have reached its peak, since the Eurostat report feeds into the concerns that underlying price pressures are far from abating. Accordingly, the data may be interpreted by the European Central Bank, the ECB, as further grounds to push on with interest rate hikes. The European Central Bank hiked up interest rates by a combined 3 percentage points since July of 2022. At the time, it raised the key interest rate for the first time in 11 years. Following that, the bank then raised them again in September, October and December of 2022 to counteract the devaluation of the euro. The current European Central Bank interest rate hike came into effect on 8th of February, when the key interest rate was taken to 2.5%. In a statement at the time, the European Central Bank vowed it would stay the course in raising interest rates significantly at a steady pace. Now officials led by President Christine Lagarde intend to lift borrowing costs by another half a percentage point at their March meeting, taking the key deposit rate from 2.5% to 3%. Christine Lagarde said in Strasbourg on 15th of February, "In view of the underlying inflation pressures, we intend to raise interest rates by another half a basis point at our next meeting in March." She added, "We will then evaluate the subsequent path of our monetary policy." As part of the post-pandemic global economic recession, the European Union has been forced to deal with a massive energy crisis and surging inflation rate. The situation further deteriorated in the wake of the Ukraine crisis, as self-destructive Western sanctions against Moscow backfired, leading to disruptions in supply chains and resulted in a spike in energy prices worldwide. Meanwhile, the Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Germany's inflation rate showed no signs of easing at the start of the year as energy and food price pressures remained high due to the war in Ukraine. Data from the Federal Statistics Office showed on Wednesday, 22nd of February, German consumer prices, harmonized to compare with other European Union countries, rose by 9.2% on the year in January. Compared with December, prices increased by 0.5%, it added, confirming preliminary data on both a monthly and an annual basis. According to non-harmonized standards, German consumer prices rose 8.7% on the year in January and 1% on the month. This follows revised inflation rates of 8.1% in December and 8.8% in November. Ruth Brand, president of the German Statistics Office, said, "Following a slowdown at the end of last year, the inflation rate thus remains at a high level." Commerzbank's chief economist, Jörg Krämer, said that following the methodological revision of the inflation basket, there has been no clear downward trend in inflation since the autumn. For the economist, it is far too early to sound the all-clear on the inflation front. Jörg Krämer said the European Central Bank should continue to raise its key interest rates decisively. Ruth Brand, the president of the German Statistics Office, said households paid higher prices in particular for energy and for food in the month of January. Energy products prices were 23.1% higher year on year, despite government relief measures. Excluding energy prices, the inflation rate stood at 7.2% in January. Food prices increased 20.2% on the year. The German Statistics Office said the rate of food price increase thus was more than twice the overall inflation rate again. Ruth Brand said, "We're observing price rises for many goods and to an increasing degree also for services. Prices of goods were up 12.7% on the year in January, and service prices increased 4.5% on the year." Meanwhile, official figures showed on Friday, 17th of February, France's annual inflation rate was at 6.6% in January, up from 5.9% in December. The slight increase stemmed from food prices being 13.3% higher and a 16.3% rise in energy prices. The monthly inflation rate was at 0.4% in January, up from minus 0.1% in December. It added the prices of energy rebounded due to the increase in petroleum product prices, partly due to the end of fuel rebates and the rise, in part supervised, in gas prices. China's Xinhua News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Just like the rest of Europe, Spain is still suffering from rising food and fuel prices on the first anniversary of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The conflict affects the budgets of households throughout the country, despite the Spanish government's attempts to keep prices as low as possible. According to Spain's statistical office, prices rose by 8.4% in the country in 2022, peaking at 10.8% in July, almost 3 percentage points more than in February of 2022, when the Russia-Ukraine conflict broke out. The price rises were mainly caused by the energy supply problems across Europe, which at the time was highly dependent on Russian gas and petroleum. Spain and Portugal were able to negotiate the Iberian exception with the other member states of the European Union, which protected them from the adverse effects of the rising gas prices, as a relatively high proportion of their energy comes from renewable sources. The cost of electricity in Spain still exceeded 200 euros per megawatt hour in the middle of 2022, which pushed up household energy bills and production costs. The price hikes were eventually passed on to consumers in Spain. According to the Spanish Statistical Office, inflation in 2022 was 8.4%. Food and non-alcoholic drinks prices increased by 15.4% between January of 2022 and January of 2023. Sugar became 52.1% more expensive, milk, butter and cooking oil costs over 30% more, and the prices of egg, yogurt, flour and cheese increased by more than 20%. At the start of 2023, the Spanish government scrapped value-added tax or VAT on essential foods for 6 months and lowered it from 10% to 5% on pasta and olive oil. According to the EU's oil bulletin, the price of diesel and petroleum also rose sharply in 2022, with the former going up 28.5% and the latter increasing by 14.9%.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.